Hi, today is February 11, 2018. This is Movies Podcast 241, Todd Agassi Award, my good friend John Westfall. And a couple of items. First one is just a follow-up on my comment last week about Google Books allowing you to buy and play audiobooks, or actually buy it on Google Play and play it on Google Books. So I got a free book from Google. I bought.
Sounds good.
Yep, I got. Well, I didn't buy it, but they gave me a like a coupon to redeem. So I got Neil Gaiman's American Gods, which was published 2001, long time ago. It's a pretty old book, but something I always thought I'd want to read, never did. Got the audio version, which is read by apparently the full cast of a TV show that adapted the book, but this is the actual book they're reading. So it's a little bit different experience from most books, which has a single narrator. It's really, you know, it's like listening to a play on a radio. So it's quite interesting. Excuse me. Still have a bit of a cough from my cold or flu, whatever I had. The app itself works the way you would expect. No real surprises. Works with my Bluetooth remote in my car, so I can, you know, pause it and back up and fast forward, things like that while I'm driving without looking down or touching the phone. So that's nice. The UI is pretty primitive compared to Audible, but, you know, no complaints. I mean, it does what you want it to do. It plays the audiobook and, you know, it doesn't skip or pause unnecessarily or anything like that. So good experience. I have an annual Audible subscription, so I'm not sure I would buy anything from Google Play. I rarely use my 12 credits, you know, one book a month from Audible. So we'll see, though. But I, you know, I might consider it. And right now, the books are really cheap to entice you. And they're in the, like, $5, $6, $7 range, I think.
Wow, that still is a great price. So yeah. If you haven't tried out audiobooks before, if you like podcasts and you think I'd like something longer form with a coherent narrative, sort of like a book except someone else doing all the reading, I would definitely check out an audiobook if you've never done so before.
Yeah, and if you have kids, I remember my daughter was, well, not little, but she was like in middle school. And up until then, I'd read her all the Harry Potter books. But when I saw book six... Have you ever seen? I mean, it's gigantic. It's like 800 pages, you know? So, no, that's not happening. So we got the audiobook and listened to it in the car going back and forth to school and events and things. And it was great. It was a great shared experience. And speaking of experiences, now I have cable TV, so it's not a big deal for me. But I know a lot of people who are cord cutters, including my friend Jay Stone. And one of the things I recommended to him during our Comics News podcast yesterday is suggesting he try YouTube TV's free one-month trial, because it allows you to watch NBC and ABC and, well, you know, for the Olympics, NBC. So theoretically, you could watch the Olympics live or, you know, whatever, whenever NBC streams, I guess, without having a cable TV subscription.
That is if you actually think NBC is adding anything to their coverage. So I saw some people quite angry yesterday.
Yeah.
That the opening ceremony had been chopped down quite a bit by NBC so that they could add more commentary and more human interest pieces on the athletes. And what I thought was really funny was that apparently the introduction of the U.S. delegation in real time took 63 seconds. And NBC, first of all, this is, NBC had cut 23 minutes, but yet they had taken a 63-second introduction and expanded it to 7 minutes.
Is this on live TV or is this on?
No, this is, so if you had gotten up during, you know, real time and watched it live over the stream, you saw the whole thing unedited because NBC wasn't broadcasting any commentary or anything.
Right.
But if you watched it later in prime time, later that day, you lost 23 minutes and got to see the same footage looped for about six times so that they could stretch 63 seconds into 7 minutes.
And as I recall, the when the U.S. team came in, they were playing Psy's Gangnam Style, so you got to listen to Gangnam Style probably for 7 minutes.
And it was, it's just, you know, I'm not a big fan of the Olympics for just ethical reasons. I think the Olympics are less than an ideal thing that we should be doing as a world. But I like the spirit of it. I think in practicality, it's way too corrupt and way too devastating on third world. But for those that do enjoy it, I would suggest checking out the streams as they are broadcast, not watching the commentary, unless you really just want to watch commentary and listen to talking heads tell you about things that you can see with your own eyes.
Right. And may I suggest to people who have not tried watching My Favorite Sport, try curling.
Oh, yeah. Curling is really interesting to watch. I like curling.
First, curling doesn't have judges. You know, they do have referees, but there's no judges. So there's no points and corrupt judges and things like that, which we now know is the case for at least ice skating, according to one study. Second, it is probably the most strategic of winter sports. It is the most like moving chess, you know?
So. Yeah, that's very true. One of my professors in grad school during the Olympics in, I think, 2002 was stuck at a conference during them. And in his hotel room, he started watching curling. And he had never seen it before. Right. And then he came back from the conference and took up curling. Like, he found a local curling league. And he took it up, and then because he was a bit eccentric and had grown up in the Bay Area and had a little bit of hippie-ish to him, wrote an entire EP about curling songs.
Oh, that's
funny. And so somewhere I have all of his curling, there's like five or six songs of curling music. So
And I've been watching curling since I was a kid, but I did not know there were any songs about them.
Oh, yeah. I have a whole album I can find if it's available anywhere and get it to you.
I wonder if it's on Spotify. Probably not.
You know, like him, you never know. You never know.
Okay. Moving on. This one may seem a little odd, but as far as I can tell, the latest update to the Google camera app for Pixels only, I believe, the original Pixel and Pixel 2s, adds AR stickers, augmented reality stickers, to still photos. Now, interestingly enough, they attacked the harder problem first. AR stickers were first made available for videos shot using Google Camera. Yeah. But now you can, you know, take a photo of something and insert, you know, like a droid or a TIE fighter or any number of things. And in addition to upgrading the app, they also added two downloadable sticker packs for the AR stickers. One is Winter Sports. And the second is a Lego-like, Minecraft-like blocks. They call it block sticker packs. So if you've got a Pixel phone, you should be getting an update soon. You probably already got it, actually. I'm usually the last one to get anything. And you can try out the new sticker packs and still photos. So you're missing out, John. All you can do is
animojis. I know. All I can do is animojis. And I feel real conflicted about animojis since I use them about once a month, if that. So I don't know. Maybe, you know, at some point, if I really have time for another hobby, I kept thinking about coming back to buying a modern flagship Android phone just to be able to play with one. But it's a big expense for just something to play with.
That's true. And speaking of animoji, I think I mentioned it before. We may have talked about it earlier, but there are a lot of people doing animoji. What's the word? Karaoke? I'm not sure. But basically, they play the actual song. I use one character at a time to build up, you know, like multiple singers, like Bohemian Rhapsody. And anyway, fun stuff to watch and listen to. Let's see. And speaking about more Google-ish stuff, so Ron Amadio over in Ars Technica has an article that he says Android Wear is dying, or dead, actually. And Qualcomm is is at fault because they have not updated their smartwatch chip, which is used in, you know, a lot of their Snapdragon chip, which is used in, I guess, all Android Wear devices. I don't know. But, yeah, you know, it's
an interesting argument. I looked it over briefly before the show. And, you know, Android Wear, it, like many things that... So here's the problem with Google and Android. There's too much in the ecosystem and not enough that Google actively promotes. And that's, I think, always been Google's problem, is that active promotion is sort of a second thought. It's probably the idea of, well, let the data tell you. If people really like this product, we'll see it in the sales and we'll go with it. But as Apple sort of pointed out with the Apple Watch, it took a while to get people on board. It took probably a good year before you start seeing Apple Watches in the wild and start seeing people going, oh, this is a thing that I actually would care about versus it's a
fun toy.
Fun toy or blip on the radar. And if you remember when Android Wear and Apple Watch first came out, there was a lot of negativity in the blogosphere of people going, these are stupid. Why would you ever want a smartwatch? Blah, blah, blah. And that really, to me, says that you can't make a product work if there's a bunch of negativity in the marketplace unless you really push it. And Apple, from day one, it was, we're going to keep doing this. You know, it doesn't matter what the reviewers say. It doesn't, you know, actually, the reviewers were usually pretty good. It was the talking heads going, you know, why would you need an Apple Watch?
Right.
So I think Google is just a little bit to blame for this, for just not pushing it.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, my first smartwatch was, gee, I'm getting a little teary-eyed now, the Microsoft Spot Watch. That, of course, you know, Microsoft supported for years, but basically blew the market by not doing anything with it, kind of like Android Wear. And then after that, I got a Momoto 360, which I used for, I don't know, 2 years, until basically it started to, you know, not be able to maintain its battery life all day. So I ended up buying an Apple Watch last year. But you know what? I really liked my Android Wear watch. I really liked my Moto 360. First, it's round, you know, like a watch should be, in my opinion. And, you know, never mind a flat tire. That's not a big deal to me. Never was. And number two, it has much better watch faces, much nicer looking and much more functional than my Apple Watch. So, you know, I actually lost functionality in some ways.
Yeah, and that's something that I am still a little bit sore about, is that even now that we're almost 4 years out with the Apple Watch, I don't think we've seen half of what Apple could do with watch faces, and it's starting to get very frustrating. Yeah. It's really the only thing in my Apple Watch that I am annoyed about on a regular basis, is that I can't do more with watch faces.
Yeah, and for those who don't know what we're talking about, you know, I strongly recommend you go and take a look at some of the third-party watch faces available for Android Wear, which are not just aesthetically pleasing, in other words, they're pretty, but they're really functional. I mean, really functional. You know, like chronographs that I guess I have one for the Apple Watch, but it doesn't really appeal to me. Whereas there are several really nice ones. I even spent like $2 for a watch face, and I actually paid money for a watch face that I really liked on my Android Wear, which I can, you know, I can't, I guess I could use. I just choose not to these days. But, meh, it's sad. You know, it's too bad there's no competition in the smartwatch.
Yeah.
I mean, well, unless you consider the Fitbit. You know, and I'm not really sure people would consider that a smartwatch.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of Fitbit anymore. That's another one that I'm wondering how long Fitbit's going to be Fitbit. But,
and, you know, I have a problem with that because I've invested a lot of time. No, let me rephrase that. I've invested a lot of steps into my Fitbit. You know, it's collecting all of my steps. Gosh, I haven't even looked at what it is today. But, and by that, I mean, you know, what my total steps since I got my first Fitbit in 2010, whenever I got it. But I think it's in the many millions. I know I passed 10 million steps a while back. And I remember kind of doing the math and, you know, figuring out I'll never reach 100 million before I die, which is kind of sad. But, you know, I'm trying to do an estimate of how many steps I'm going to make. You know, if they die, you know, if Fitbit dies before I do, then I'll never know. It's just kind of sad. You know, unless
That's one thing I like about Apple Health Vault, is that Microsoft Health Vault and Apple's Health Kit data is that hopefully I put more faith in Microsoft being around and Apple being around longer than companies like Fitbit, unfortunately. And I think Fitbit, they really signed themselves over to wearables on the wrist when they stopped creating just the little trackers they started with.
Which are awesome. I still use my Fitbit one. That is the Fitbit I use.
Yeah, if I actually had an updated version of the Fitbit one, I probably would wear Fitbit today as well as my Apple Watch just to get more tracking.
Yeah, because I don't always wear a watch, you know. But it's really easy to just stick a Fitbit in my pant pocket and, you know, there I go, right? There's, like, nothing to think about.
Yep.
Yeah, even though,
again,
and that's
a
even
company
though
that had a great product and then abandoned it because they thought the whole market wanted one thing. And we don't know. Maybe the market now would like a wearable that wasn't always visible.
Right, right. So I'm trying to figure out. So I'm logged into the Fitbit dashboard, and there used to be a way to see, you know, your lifetime totals.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they've just made it too hard to do that. How do you do that? Center to log? No. Is it under that? No. Well, that's sad. You know, they even made their dashboard junky. So it used to be you could log into your dashboard on the web, and it would show you, you know, the stuff you can see on your phone is average steps, blah, blah, blah. That's not a big deal. But what was more important to me is you could see your lifetime stats, you know, for however long you've had a Fitbit. And if it's there, boy, I'm telling you, let me click on my face here. Maybe that shows me what it is. A 30-day graph, it's just 30 days. There's no lifetime. Very, 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 very sad. Wait, let's try overall. And there's no way to select something. Oh, there it is. Total lifetime. I'm at 31,259,912 steps since I first got my Fitbit in, I think, 2010. So not quite 8 years.
31 million. I'm trying to think if there's a way for me to get the two or three places that I have my step data at. But I know you have surpassed me many, many, many times over.
And although the Fitbit didn't have, I don't think early Fitbits had a barometer, so it didn't measure floors climbed. But whenever the first one with a barometer with floors, I have done 34,212 floors.
And all I can tell you is that this year, in 2018, I've done 139 floors and 186,000 steps.
Wow. And one more. 14,131.9 miles. Total lifetime distance. So that's how much I've walked with my Fitbit.
And it hasn't even been your whole lifetime. It's been a few years.
The lifetime of an 8-year-old. You know, I've had it like 8 years, so. Yeah. So I hope they don't get rid of this, because it will be very, 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 very sad.
I hope that at least if they do, they give you checkout and export to Microsoft or Apple or wherever you want to put it, so that you can at least bring those stats with you.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, because you can do that now if you pay, you know, an annual fee, which I don't. But I guess I'd be willing to pay for 1 month if, you know, it would allow me to export my data before Fitbit dies.
Well, I don't think they're going to go the way of just one day they're gone. But
yeah, I don't think so either.
But, you know, it has happened. Pebble did that. Pebble was here one day, and then the next day they were sold, and everything was
they sold to Fitbit,
not
right?
for sale anymore. Yeah, they were sold to Fitbit, and everything was not for sale anymore. And some of the products I think still work, but once they stop working, they just are gone.
Right. And didn't you get like some kind of digital wallet for credit cards that was kind of like that too?
Yeah. I had a few of those. I had one that was kind of junky, and then I backed another one that just died.
Right.
But, you know, again, we've had the discussion before about how useful it would be to have credit cards on one object, and would you really want that? And yesterday I went to Walgreens for something and realized that everything in my transaction could have been done on my Apple Watch. In fact, most of the time I go to Walgreens, I pull up my reward card barcode on my watch, they scan it, and then I use my watch for Apple Pay. So, and I can select whatever credit card I want for Apple Pay. You know, I've got two or three of them hooked up, and I can say I want it off of this card or that card. So that might be the future. Is just when contactless is everywhere, your phone, you would just pick which card you want and use that.
Well, let's hope Fitbit doesn't go away. And, gee, I didn't even check if I can buy another Fitbit one to replace this one someday. It's still okay, you know. So I guess I should check the store. Can you still buy one? Where's their store? About Us. Investor. Everything about how to buy your product, which to me... Oh, here, store. Okay. Sale ends February 14th, Valentine's Day. Save up to $50 on select gifts. Let's see, but let's just check. Iconic Flyer, Aria 2, Aria HR, Charge 2, Blaze. You cannot buy a 1 anymore. It does not exist. That is sad. That
Fitbit
is
none.
Fitbit none. The closest thing they have to that is a Zip.
And I don't know if that even syncs up to the Fitbit service.
Yeah. Huh.
I mean, wasn't that their one that was just like a standalone pedometer?
Yeah, and it's pretty ugly, too.
Yeah.
Okay, that's kind of sad. So, it doesn't have floors climb, doesn't track your sleep. All it does is steps, calories, distance, and clock time. So, it's not even a...
Yeah, it doesn't do anything.
So, I guess what I would do is buy a Flex 2 and yeah, buy a Flex 2 and just stick it in my pocket.
Well, you can find them on eBay still, but they're pretty expensive on eBay now that Fitbit's not selling them anymore. They're going for about $100 to $160 on eBay.
Okay, by the way, Flex 2 won't work because it doesn't have sleep or floors climbed. Alta doesn't have that. Alta HR.
The prices
doesn't have
that they're offering for and they're getting on eBay because Fitbit has killed it off is just crazy right now.
So you
Yeah.
You cannot get a Flex 2 Alta or Alta HR if you want floors climbed. The lowest level device you can buy is the Charge 2 with a list of 150, currently on sale for 120. And it has steps, calories, distance, floors climbed, clock time, sleep tracking, and sleep stages, which I don't have right now. So, but that's sad. You got to pay. Yeah. And it's a wrist, you know, thing. So
for a product that started out at, I think, $100, it is crazy to see that there are completed auctions on eBay for $150, $160 or more.
Well, it tells you there's a, not in demand.
People want them.
Yeah.
Well, I suggest get your data over to Apple and then just use your Apple Watch for the sleep tracking and all the other things you might want to do. You could be like me. I actually have my first gen or my Apple Watch Series 0, as they're sometimes jokingly referred to, on charge during the day. And then I wear that at night for sleep tracking and while my daily Apple Watch is charging.
Oh, well, okay, that's sad. All right, well, anyway, moving on from sadness. I want to hear about this. I want to hear about your wireless charger.
Okay, so hold on one moment.
Okay, sounds like you're emotional about this.
No, I just have to clear my throat. This week I was on Amazon and Carrie needed something, my wife, so I bought that in my cart, and then another person that I wanted to buy something for, which I'll talk about after this. And then I thought, you know, I have a phone that can do wireless charging. I haven't really thought it's all that important, so I haven't bought a wireless charger, but maybe since I'm already buying some stuff from Amazon, I'll take a look at the wireless chargers and see what I like and maybe pick one up just to play with it. And by play with that, I mean charge something off.
Right.
So I picked up an Anker wireless charger because Anker typically makes quality things, as I have found. And this one had 4 out of 5 stars. It was $25. So I got it the other day, and I've been pretty happy. I mean, this is something that people who have had wireless chargers for years have known about. But what really impressed me was, the case I use for my iPhone X is a 12 South BookBook case, which looks like a little book when you're holding it, and it's got a wallet on the left side, and your phone sits on the right side. And the phone can slide out of the BookBook case. It actually is in a little sleeve or a little shell case, and you can pull that out and use it and leave the wallet part wherever you want. So I figured I would probably have to pull it out and put it on the charger without the BookBook around it, the leather wallet port. What I found out was that actually it will work with the leather portion around it as normal. So I can come home, take my phone and wallet out of my pocket, one unit, lay it down with the leather on there. I have to make sure that it makes contact, but that's not too hard because the charger lights up when it makes contact. And then I can pull it off, and it's kind of a cool little thing. But I was really shocked that it would work so well with the BookBook around it. Now, if I take the phone out of the BookBook and just leave it in the little plastic sleeve that docks into the BookBook, it works really good then. I could just kind of lay it on there without thinking But I've been pretty happy, and I definitely can see the appeal of wireless chargers now. I always thought, well, how big of a deal is it to plug in my charger? You know, that's not too big a deal. And I've always resisted, even before the Qi standard or Qi standard, I always resisted buying like the proprietary things where you would have a special plate that you'd put on your phone or a special case or something like that. That always seemed like a bunch of hype, but this is a pretty cool thing that I picked up this week, and I've been pretty happy with it.
Now, I see it's listed for as compatible with a bunch of things, including the iPhone 8 and, iPhone 10 and Galaxy Notes and some of the older Nexi. But does it work with the Apple Watch?
You know, I haven't tried it with the Apple Watch. I doubt that it would, because I don't think the Apple Watch is compatible with the Qi standard.
Okay.
But I will, I'll try that out, and I will let you know. If it does work, I will let you know very quickly after this podcast. If it doesn't work, then just assume that it doesn't, because you didn't hear from me.
Yeah. But go check. I don't want you to, damage your watch by accident. I was just curious. And there are two, apparently. So there's the one you bought for like $25.99. And there's another Anker wireless charging pad, which also is compatible with iPhone 8, 8 Plus. And it's $17.99. I'm not quite sure what the difference is. Might be size. Might be a little smaller.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. Mine is supposed to allow for fast charging, but my device doesn't support fast charging. Well, I think it does if I have the right USB hub, but I haven't really looked into that. It charges plenty fast for me. So.
Yeah. I did see a Belkin charger at the Apple store yesterday that can charge both a watch and a phone simultaneously. So I thought that was... Of course, I don't have... the only phone I have that supports Qi charging is my Nexus 6. Pixel 2 does not support wireless charging, I think. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it doesn't. So the only active device I have is that uses wireless charging is my Apple Watch. And I've been looking for something else besides the one that came with it, but it's not critical. You know, it's not like I need it anytime soon. Okay. All right. And next up?
Well, next up is the other thing that I bought on Amazon this week. At Christmas time this year, one of my in-laws gave me a tile tracker, which is these little things you clip onto your keys or you clip onto anything that you're likely to lose. And if you double tap on it, it will ring your phone, even if your phone's on silent. And if you call it from your phone, then it'll ring wherever it's at. So it's kind of a way to get find my phone or find my keys or whatever I attached it to. And so I played with it here and there, and it works reliably. I've been happy with it. The main problem is I don't lose things regularly.
Which is good.
So, yeah, it's never been a problem that I don't lose things. But it also means that I never realized just how vital this might be to someone who does lose things quite a bit.
Right, right.
So one of my friends, we met up with, my wife and I met up with her on, I guess not yesterday, Saturday, but the Saturday before. And we were at a coffee shop. And when we went to leave, she had misplaced her keys. Her keys had fallen out of her pocket and fallen into the couch that we were sitting on. And so she had that moment of panic where you wonder, you know, where is this? And it's really bad if I've lost it. And I had to drive here somehow, but I hope it didn't get lost and someone took my car or whatever.
Right.
So I thought, well, you know what? She would probably do really well with one of these tile trackers because she is exactly the target market for it.
Right.
So I went online and they cost, I picked up a 4-pack, even though I'm not really using the one I had. I thought, well, I might play with them more if I had a few extras. And,
right.
You know, maybe I'll throw them in bags anyway, just in case I leave a bag somewhere. And I'm not sure if it's at home or at work or something like that. And I think I paid about $50 for a 4-pack. So they come out to about $15 each. They do die after a year or so. So, but then when they do die, they send you a coupon for, I think it's 40% off a new one.
Well, that's reasonable.
Yeah, so it's not extravagant. You are paying for it every year, but it's basically a subscription service at that point.
Right.
And so I gave her one of them, which is also nice. You can buy a 4-pack And if you don't want to use all four, you can give some to someone else. They don't tie to whoever bought them. They tie to whoever pairs them the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out in the last 72 hours she's had it that it's already been very useful twice when she lost her keys around her apartment twice. So
wow.
It's definitely something that I never thought to think of reviewing because, as I said, I don't really use it that often. But I've been pretty happy with and would recommend to others if they do chronically lose their keys or they chronically lose anything, because you can attach it to anything you want, your bag, you can put right. it on external hard drives you take places, any of those things. Tile is a pretty decent option. They even make a tracker that embeds in one of those KeySmart foldable key holders that are popular, so you can even have it directly find your keys because your keys are screwed to it directly. So
yeah,
so that was my recommendation for this week. If you are the kind of person that loses your keys, check it out.
Yeah, fortunately I do not, and you know, and it really doesn't solve the problem I need for. I think what I need to do is use some kind of a passive RFID device to start tagging physical objects. You know, mm-hmm. when I put them in storage, so I can find them again.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different discussion topic. I shall consider this later. Okay.
The other speaking of inventorying things, putting things in places. At Christmas, my mother picked up one of the Rocket notebooks.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
Cool. It's basically a notebook that you write on with these special gel pens that are erasable.
Uh-huh.
And when you fill the notebook up, you can take it and put it in the microwave for like 10 minutes or something.
Oh, I have heard of those. Itself. Yeah.
Yeah. But she didn't really want it after she started playing with it, and she gave it to me. And so I use it around the house for taking down quick notes. And it does have an app that will pinpoint the four corners easily so you can quickly make a scan of it. That's what it's designed for, because then after your notebook fills up, you've got the scans and you can
erase the notebook. Yeah.
Yeah, replace them, you know, just zap it.
Right.
And I've been actually pretty happy with that for things like when I do my yearly inventory of some of the crates and things I have, being able to quickly look them up, because not only do I have the paper notebook at home, when I'm away from home and I, you know, if I tell someone, you know, just it's in this box or whatever, I can look that up from a distance.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good idea. And maybe I should start doing that, you know, kind of quasi-paper electronic. I do have a Moleskine Evernote paper mm-hmm. notebook that is not self-erasing in microwave, but in other respects it's similar, where, you know, it has like micro lines on it that allows the camera to line up automatically. So, you know, I don't mm-hmm. have to search for the corners. So that's a good idea. I might start doing that, kind of combination of paper and phone. I like that idea.
And the nice thing about paper is that you can draw out, you know, like I have a couple of chests of Sterilite drawers, and so I can literally draw a picture of the chest of drawers and write, you know. So it's a little bit more flexible than if you're making a list on your phone or in Evernote or something like that.
Oh, I'm glad I talked to you about that. That's a really good idea. One other question, not on our show notes, just so the Apple HomePod is out.
Mm-hmm.
I know neither of us, I think, have any plans to buy one at $350, but anybody know buying one?
I don't know anyone that has one. And you're right, I'm not really interested in buying one in that I have a lot of money invested in Sonos speakers.
Right.
So it really would be a waste for me to have one. But I did watch, actually last night, a few reviews of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, it's a compelling product. I wasn't too keen on even what it was until I started watching these reviews and these reviewers that I think in spite of themselves were a little shocked at how, you know, good it sounded and how useful it could be. So, you know, I think it's a good first stab for Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see kind of where it goes. But I'm happy with my Sonos, and I think my Sonos will kind of scale nicely over the next few years. And I like that I can hook up pretty much any audio channel to the Sonos, including MLB.tv streams, and if I wanted to, Spotify, and a ton of other things. Apple, you really have to be locked into the Apple ecosystem for the HomePod. But if all you do is use Apple Music and you're on the Apple ecosystem, it looks like a pretty cool product.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, I still don't want one, but it's... Well, it's funny. I don't want an Apple TV either. You know, I bought the second generation Apple TV. It died a couple years ago. Replaced it with a series of Rokus, actually. No, that's not true. I replaced it with a Apple Fire TV stick, which died like within a year. Amazon Fire TV stick, which died in less than a year, and Amazon wouldn't replace it under warranty, which annoyed me. So I abandoned that, and I got a Roku TV. It's been working pretty well. It's actually my second Roku TV.
Yeah, I do have an Apple TV, and I do enjoy it, but I also have about 40 or so movies that are on iTunes, so streaming those would be kind of more difficult. And I have HomeKit devices that the Apple TV serves as a hub for.
Yeah, I think I bought a couple of things on iTunes, you know, video-wise, but not enough to make me stay with the Apple TV ecosystem. I've been buying more videos on Google Play because I have a family plan that I share with my daughter, so who's not here. You know, she's away. So it's really a cheap and convenient way for her to watch stuff, although I have to pay for it, but that's okay. Any rate, okay, so that's Mobile Views Podcast 241. Kind of covered a bunch of stuff, a little bit of ranting, and we will talk to you next time.